striding into the midst of a great multitude with people reaching out longingly, desperate to be healed of all manner of diseases afflicting their bodies and spirits. Jesus looks round and proclaims hopeful challenge. Hopeful challenge. First, he speaks of the blessedness of the poor, the hungry, the weeping, the excluded and reviled. To these belong God's dominion, he says. And then he goes on to promise better times. Better times when the hungry will be filled, the weeping will laugh, and those defamed on account of the Son of Man, they will leap for joy. To underscore the point, he then speaks a troubling word to the many kinds of rich people, to those whose bellies are filled with food and all whose mouths are chock full of mirth, to all those on whom praise is lavished. These rich had best be careful, Jesus seems to say, for a great reversal is underway. Yes, echoing the prophet Isaiah and even Jesus' own mother's lullaby, Magnificat, in this sermon, Jesus reveals surprising things about who enjoys blessing and who endures woe. To the crowds shuffling about, trying to get even a hand on him, straining to get help from him, Jesus' words must have sounded particularly strange. They knew deep in the recesses of their human experiences of pain and suffering, they knew that the struggles they endured were marks of God's disfavor. That's the calculus of human misery, right? If we are not succeeding, or if we are burdened, somehow we're sure we must have failed. Surely there are signs that God is not pleased. But to the contrary, Jesus insists God's dominion works another way altogether. Mindful of the Roman Empire's control and domination, and of the prevailing attitudes touting that people only get what they deserve, Luke's version of this particular sermon unpacks Jesus' hometown teaching from back in the Nazarene synagogue. Remember that? He'd read from the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, and then he told them that he had come as one anointed to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim release to captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free. Now Jesus is taking it a step further. Not only does he speak to the have-nots, to those whose lives seem anything but blessed in the present moment, Jesus also addresses the haves, speaks to all in power, of comfort, in safety and security, the full-bellied, the laughing, the praised. Jesus says, woe will come to them. Or is it really to us? There's so much privilege among us, huh? Even when we suffer, there are whole armies of people ready to do battle with whatever ails us. The finest doctors and lawyers, accountants and therapists, trainers and every specialist under the sun. So it goes that when Jesus speaks the words of blessing, most of us cringe a little, knowing the proverbial flip side of that coin. Woe to you, Jesus says. The recognition stings. Still, before you go out with shoulders slumping and hampered hearts, recognizing as you do the truth these words speak, the rich, full-bellied, easygoing lot of us, before any of us walks away despairing. Let us consider also that the lesson did not end. It didn't end with those words of woe. Jesus goes on. Jesus continues with an admonition. An admonition to love, to bless, to pray, and to give. Rather than begrudging someone what they desire, Jesus calls his followers, calls us, to treat everyone in the way we ourselves would want to be treated. Essentially, I think this means Jesus has hope. I think it means he hopes a new way of being will actually take hold even in rich folks. Just as the poor and sorrowing will be lifted from grief, so we could move beyond the patterns of self-serving that so easily have become our ways of being in the world. Toward that end, Jesus presses us to love and give. To love and to give beyond all expectation. Lately, some of us have been reading Kent Anand's book, Following Jesus Through the Eye of the Needle. In an incredibly down-to-earth relational style, Kent there lays out the story of his first encounters with the deep needs of Haitians, beginning for him back in 2003. One of the things I like best about the book is Kent's honesty about how hard it is to follow Jesus' way of self-giving. This revolutionary, possession-relinquishing way Jesus calls for time and time again. But rather than paint himself as some saintly model of perfected discipleship, throughout the book, Kent lays out the truth of his struggles. Frequently, he contrasts the utterly desperate needs of the people around him with his own rather meager expectations of comfort and security. Kent tells a story familiar to most of us. We know it even without traveling to Haiti. We know it all too well through our inbox and mailbox. By way of the media and an absolute multitude of agencies seeking our help, the world reaches out to us, kind of like those crowds reaching toward Jesus. They cry a litany of needs. The poor, the hungry, the sorrowful, they're not merely some caricatures in a Bible story, foils by which Jesus gets across his message. No, they're real people. And they're gathered all around us, even among us. People aching for God's great reversal, for blessing instead of curse. Today we mark a festival of All Saints. And in this great communion of saints God gathers, each one of us is called to be present not only to the beloved, blessed dead whom we remember, or to the gloriously good of whom we're especially fond. No, God gathers us into a communion of all saints. And in so doing, binds us to everyone. Weak and strong, rich and poor, the enchanting as well as the seemingly utterly unlovable. And in this communion, our call is not to serve only the ones we like or those who like us. Rather, as with Jesus, God gives us to the multitudes, to those great crowds of people in all their raw neediness, to neighbors near and far, to the poor just down the street, and those half a world away. Jesus presses us to share freely all that we have so that all would know God's favor. Captives of every kind released, the blind newly seeing. In just a moment, before we gather into ourselves, more people to be part of this communion, before also we collect the offerings of our prayers and the gifts of our money and our pledges of support for next year, together we will sing. We'll sing a glad recollection of how the saints of old used to bring their tithes and offerings, the first fruits of orchard, flock, and field. In the second stanza, we'll recall our own challenge, remembering the world in need that now summons us to labor, love, and give. Dear friends, while we sing, and as we go forward from this place back into the rounds of daily living, in all, I pray that the hopeful challenge of Jesus yet resounds in us and for us. I trust that the song of blessedness for the poor and hungry, the weeping and reviled, does not get misread to be some excuse for our inaction or fuel for our complacency. Rather, may it offer a kind of underlying drone, a steady, keen reminder of God's abiding intention to satisfy and to heal, to fill all the hungry with all good things. To those who will listen, Jesus urges, do to others as you would have them do to you. Saintly sinners that we are, may we listen well. And when we hear the cries of the poor, the hungry, the sorrowful, and reviled, may we respond. Amen.